If you would please open your Bible to 1 Chronicles chapter number 28 today. Last time we were talking about how David was preparing the kingdom that Solomon would rule over, giving all the logistical structure to it that he apparently received from the instruction of the Holy Spirit. David is doing this in his late 60s because he knows he doesn't have too much time left in his life. And his son, Solomon, is still a teenager and needs kind of that head start in his kingdom. We also talked about the idea that Solomon's coronation was very hastily done because it was a reaction by David, who was ailing at the time and kind of bedridden, to the coronation of Adonijah, accomplished by some of David's administration members. They had assumed that the eldest surviving son of David, Adonijah, should be the new king. And so they were trying to get ahead of things by putting him on the throne at Enrogel. But once David figured out that this was going on, he hastily arranged for an official coronation to take place at the Gihon Spring with Solomon riding the official royal mule and putting on the royal robes and seating himself upon the royal throne. And so that shut down the Adonijah coronation and elevated Solomon to the position of king. And so, in a very weird twist, we currently have two kings of United Israel. There is David, who's spending a lot of time in bed, and there is his son Solomon, who is functioning as the king. But because the coronation happened so rapidly, I think David decided there needed to be something bigger, something with more pomp and circumstance. And I believe that that might have happened in the seventh Jewish month of the year 981 BC. So the fall of that year, probably following a few months after this hastily done coronation. Now, why do I think it might happen at that time? Well, the seventh month was a very important month to the Jewish people because it was the month of beginnings. It wrapped up the harvest cycle. It's when the Feast of Trumpets took place. It's when the fast of Yom Kippur happened, and everybody had that somber reflection that they needed forgiveness of sins that came through the sacrificial system at the tabernacle. And they also had the great big harvest celebration called the Feast of Tabernacles. So it would appear that at least at the beginning of the United Israeli Kingdom, the seventh month was also the way that you counted the years of service of the king. So by having an official coronation in the seventh month would make really good sense. And all the people would have been gathering together anyway. So regardless of when it happened, this is how it happened. 1 Chronicles chapter 28. David assembled at Jerusalem all the officials of Israel, the officials of the tribes. So we talked about there's a leader for each of the 12 tribes. The officers of the divisions that served the king, so the military leaders. The commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds. We'd call those guys the officers and the non-commissioned officers of the military, the stewards of all the property and livestock of the king, that would be all these logistical personnel that we talked about yesterday, that are in charge of everything that belongs to the royal family, and his sons, so all of David's children, who are now going to serve Solomon as king, but many of them are actually older than him, together with the palace officials, so everybody that takes care of King David, and they're now going to be taking care of King Solomon. The mighty men and all the seasoned warriors. So the top of the military, right down through the rank and file of the military. So everybody is being gathered to Jerusalem for this coronation. Then King David rose to his feet, which is a really big deal, because he's got health issues that has been keeping him in bed lately. And so now he's able to stand up in front of this assembly for a little while and address them. And this is what he says. Hear me, my brothers and my people. I had it in my heart to build a house of rest for the ark of the covenant of He Who Is, and for the footstool of our God. And I have made preparation for the building. Now, a house of rest, that's another way of referring to this temple. The word temple in Hebrew, by the way, is just the word for palace. And sometimes they use the idea a house of residence. The Ark of the Covenant, remember, is not a fancy storage box. It is the throne of God, the portable throne of God on earth. It's a sedan chair. And we'll actually see that wording getting used here in a little bit by David. So it's a highly ornate throne that God is seen to be seated upon in the minds and the hearts of Israel. It's also referred to as the footstool of our God. Now, that's a little bit confusing for us in the Western English-speaking world, or at least it always was for me, because when I hear about a footstool, I think Ottoman. I think about when you're sitting on the couch or sitting in your easy chair, you put your feet up on the footstool. That's not what this word means. This word has the idea of the platform underneath a throne. The dais, or the dais, if you will. So the Ark of the Covenant, where it sits, is the place where God's feet are symbolically placed in Israel. So the temple is going to be where that platform is located. It'll be the Holy of Holies. So David says that he's been making preparations for the building of this palace, for this house, for this place where God's holy throne is going to be located. Verse 3, but God said to me, you may not build a house for my name, for you are a man of war and have shed blood. Now, this all happened back when David first came up with the idea of building the palace, which would have been shortly after they got into Jerusalem, and when he brought the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem and to his palace complex. But through Nathan the prophet, God tells David, you're not the guy. You have been too much devoted to war, which was an important thing that David needed to do, but it made him a man of blood, a man who shed blood in great quantities. He killed tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people during his military campaigns. And so God doesn't want him building the temple. He wants a man of peace to build the temple, which is why David gave Solomon the name he gave him, because Shlomo, or Solomon, means peaceful. So here he is going back over this story with the people, saying, I wanted to build the palace for God. I wanted to build this temple, but God said, no, you're not a peaceful person. Yet, verse 4, He who is God of Israel chose me from all my father's house to be king over Israel forever. For he chose Judah as leader, and in the house of Judah, my father's house, and among my father's sons, he took pleasure in me to make me king over all Israel. So that's just a reminder again that the dynasty that God has prophetically selected is the Davidic dynasty. And that is a permanent deal. Verse 5, and of all my sons, for he who is has given me many sons. He, notice the emphasis here, God's the one that made the selection. He has chosen Shlomo, or Solomon, or Peaceable, my son, to sit on the throne of the kingdom of he who is over Israel. He said to me, it is Shlomo, or peaceful, your son, who shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father. I will establish his kingdom forever if, notice the conditionality, if he continues strong in keeping my commandments and my rules as he is today. So, the reason Adonijah is not king is because God had already decided that Shlomo was going to be the king, because he has never participated in warfare. That's very symbolically important for the building of the palace, the building of the temple. So Solomon has been picked, even though Solomon is going to blow it before he's dead. And his offspring, that is David's offspring, will always be the king of Israel. Solomon is the first of the series, and eventually the Solomon line will have a curse put on it so that a secondary line is the one that will have the blessing of the Messiah put on it. It's interesting when we get to the New Testament. Matthew follows the line of Solomon, which brings about Joseph, the adopted father of Jesus, while Luke follows the genealogy of Solomon's younger brother, Nathan, which results in Miriam, or Mary, who is the biological mother of Jesus, who is the ultimate offspring of David, to whom belongs the right to rule over the tribes of Israel, and is actually King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But here we are back in 1 Chronicles 28:7, with the reminder that the only way that Solomon is going to continue ruling is if he behaves himself like he is right now, when he's a teenager. If he gets away from that, God will spank him metaphorically. And that's exactly what we'll see happen historically. Verse number 8, now therefore, in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of he who is, and in the hearing of our God, observe and seek out all the commandments of he who is your God, that you may possess this good land and leave it for an inheritance to your children after you forever. So David encourages the people, do what God said so that you can live peacefully in this land of promise and leave it into the hands of the next generation. Verse number 9, you, Solomon, my son, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and with a willing mind. For he who is searches all hearts and understands every plan and thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. Very important. David is encouraging Solomon to stay on track. And understand, God knows the inside and out of your life and your thinking process. Notice, though, the conditionality. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. So Solomon, if you turn your back on God, God will deal out justice to you. Be careful now, for he who is has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it. So the most important job for Solomon is the building of the temple, the building of the house of prayer. And then David gave Solomon, his son, the plan of the vestibule of the temple and of its houses, its treasuries, its upper rooms, its inner chambers, and of the room for the mercy seat. Now that's a reference to the Ark of the Covenant. The mercy seat is the top of the Ark of the Covenant. And so the room that's being referenced here is the most holy place. All of these things we will talk about in detail whenever we get to the actual building of the temple. Right now, all we need to know is that David has it all written out at this date, in the 37th year of his rule. And he's handing it to him, giving him the blueprints, all the details. Verse 12, and the plan of all that he had in mind for the courts of the house of he who is, all the surrounding chambers, the treasuries of the house of God, and the treasuries for dedicated gifts, for the divisions of the priests and of the Levites, and all the work of the service of the house of he who is. Those are the things that we were reading in the earlier chapters. And for all the vessels for the service of the house of he who is, the weight of gold for all golden vessels for each service, the weight of silver vessels for each service, the weight of the golden lampstands and their lamps, and the weight of gold for each lampstand and its lamps, the weight of silver for a lampstand and its lamps, according to the use of each lampstand in the service. Now, the original tabernacle had one lampstand in it. The temple is going to have multiple lampstands throughout it, inside and out. The original tabernacle worship site had one table, but the new temple is going to have multiple tables in and around it. So David is handing over to Solomon the plans for building all of this, fashioning all of these things. Verse number 16, I think we broke off. The weight of gold for each table for the showbread, the silver for the silver tables, pure gold for the forks, the basins, the cups, for the golden bowls and the weight of each, for the silver bowls and the weight of each, for the altar of incense made of refined gold and its weight. Now, there's only ever one altar of incense. There was no need for multiple ones because it's used for a singular service. That is, the incense that's offered mid-morning, the incense that's offered in the afternoon, and the prayers that are offered at that same time. So only one golden altar of incense. And then also his plans for the golden chariot of the cherubim that spread their wings and covered the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is. Now that word for chariot there probably brings up in your mind, like it did when I was a younger man, it brings up into your mind something with wheels on it. But the word does not always refer to a wheeled vehicle. It is also the word that is used for a transported device carried on poles, which is exactly what the Ark of the Covenant is. So we would say a sedan chair that's carried on poles. And so David gives to Solomon the plans that are involved in housing the Ark of the Covenant. Verse number 19, all this he made clear to me in writing from the hand of he who is, all the work to be done according to the plan. Now that's interesting as well. That seems to indicate that David received all of these design plans through the Holy Spirit. that the Temple of Solomon, which is actually the temple designed by David, and all of the work, organization for the worship, and organization of the country, all of that came straight from God, probably through a prophet, to David, and now David has written it all down, and he's passing it on to Solomon. So the temple design, beyond a shadow of any doubt whatsoever, is that it is inspired by God. And that will be important when we start looking at it. Verse number 20. Then David said to Solomon his son, "Be strong and courageous and do it. Do not be afraid, do not be dismayed, for he who is God, even my God, is with you. He will not leave you or forsake you until all the work of the service of the house of he who is finished." Now that's an important thing to be telling a teenager. The Jewish tradition, long-standing Jewish tradition, is that Solomon was made king by David when Solomon was about 15, and that he's going to spend about 3 years with his dad focused on the transition of the kingdom over into his hands. So that's still only going to make him about 18 when he takes the kingdom as a solo leader upon his father's death. So he's a young man. He's a kid for all practical purposes. And that's a scary thing to think that you're going to be in charge of an entire nation and the building of the temple of the God of the universe. So David is getting ahead of that and saying, look, don't be afraid. Don't be scared. God is on top of this. You just need to trust him and follow his lead. Verse 21, "And behold, the divisions of the priests and the Levites and for all the service of the house of God, and with you in all the work will be every willing man who has skill in any kind of service, and also the officers and all the people will be holy at your command." So you're not alone because God is helping you, and you're also not alone because God's inspired and helped a whole bunch of other people to be right there with you doing this stuff. So trust God and trust the people and trust the plan. Chapter number 29. David the king said to all the assembly, "Solomon my son, whom alone God has chosen, is young and inexperienced, and the work is great. For the palace will not be for man, but for he who is God." Now, this is one of the few times that the word in Hebrew for the temple is translated literally out for what it is, and that's a palace. So the temple is just God's palace on earth. Verse 2, "So I have provided for the house of my God so far as I was able, the gold for all the things of gold, the silver for the things of silver, the bronze for the things of bronze, the iron for the things of iron, the wood for the things of wood, besides great quantities of onyx and stones for setting, antimony, colored stones, all sorts of precious stones and marble. Moreover, in addition to all that, I have provided for the holy house, I have a treasure of my own of gold and silver, and because of my devotion to the house of my God, I give it to the house of my God." So David tells Solomon, "I've been storing up for this for years, for decades. I've got a whole bunch of material on hand. And you'll be able to add to it, and the people are going to add to it right now, because I'm going to ask them to do that, to donate." And so David then starts giving ballpark amounts of material here. 3,000 talents of gold of the gold of Ophir. So this is already processed, refined gold. 3,000 talents. A talent is roughly 75 to 100 pounds. So just taking the smaller number of that, you're talking about at least 112.5 tons of gold that David has stored up. The modern purchasing power of the value of this time period of David for all of this gold would be well over $10 billion. 7,000 talents of refined silver for overlaying the houses, the walls of the house. Again, we've got about 262.5 tons worth of silver. Modern purchasing value, somewhere over $3 billion. But it's going to be used as construction material. Verse 5, for all the work to be done by craftsmen, gold for all things of gold, silver for the things of silver, who then will be offer willingly consecrating himself today to he who is? So David puts the call out. That's what I've given. What about the rest of you? What about you guys in leadership? Will you give? Verse 6, then the leaders of fathers' houses made their freewill offerings, as did also the leaders of the tribes, the commanders of thousands and of hundreds, the officers over the king's work. They gave to the service of the house of God 5,000 talents and 10,000 derricks of gold. A derrick is a smaller portion of a talent. So this represents somewhere around at least 187 tons of gold that they gave, 24 billion plus in value, 10,000 talents of silver, so 375 tons at least, well over $5 billion worth, 18,000 talents of bronze, and so that's at least 670 tons. 675 tons of bronze, 100,000 talents of iron. That's 3,750 tons at the very least of these things. And then whoever had precious stones gave them to the treasury of the house of he who is in the care of Jehiel the Gershonite. So these people are just pouring out of their wealth into the storerooms of the temple construction project. And this is one of the reasons I say when everything is said and done, just the material used in the building of the temple is going to be in the trillions of dollars worth of value. It is an amazing project.